Okay, the focus of today's talk is kind of a summary of 23 years of taxonomic work I've been doing on potato and tomato, mainly on potato. Over the last 23 years, I've worked for the USDA, ARS, I've had the privilege of serving on many germplasm collecting expeditions, and I've used a variety of morphological and molecular markers to re-examine a very complex group, Solanum section potata, wild and cultivated potatoes. And there have been tremendous changes in the taxonomy of this group, and I'd just like to make the point that this has been possible because of the generous position I'm in and also funding from various funding agencies, and I would predict that with this degree of work that there would be similar changes to many plant groups. So one of the big sources of funding was an NSF grant, the Plant Biotic and Inventories Grants. It funded three PhD students and a postdoc, and this just shows some of the morphological variability from some of our morphometric studies, combining morphological data with molecular data to re-examine the two basic questions that taxonomists have. What's a species, and how are these species interrelated? Just as a general introduction to potato or Solanum section potato, they're widely distributed, as shown here in green, from the southwestern United States, Mexico, Central America, and extending down into South America, with a variety of habitats such as dry deciduous forest here in Mexico or upland puna in northern South America. And at the very southern part of the range, potato, Solanum tuberosum, grows along beaches. There's also a tremendous diversity in ploidy levels, all the way from diploid at 2n equal 2x equal 24, all the way to hexaploids. And it's part of the taxonomic complexity in this group relates to the various ploidy levels. There's hybridization at both the diploid and the polyploid level. Now, when I entered into this work 23 years ago, there were many different ideas of what constitutes a species and how are they interrelated, is shown here in this diagram by one, two, three, four different taxonomists who put potatoes in different series. And even though you can't see it here, each of these numbers has a represents the different number of species that the taxonomists placed in those series, and they had very different ideas about the placement of species into series. So some of the early work we did was using plastid DNA restriction site variation, and one of the early findings we found was that here are potatoes here. There are five placeholders, and the closest relative of potato was tomato, and relative to any kind of a rational classification scheme, tomato was really part of the genus Solanum, not part of the genus. It didn't stand as its own genus, Lycopersicon, and that changing of the name of potato into Solanum has subsequently been adopted worldwide. And then we showed various other relationships, such as these species here. These were placed in section potata, again, within the potatoes. They don't bear tubers, and we were able to show outgroup relationships. You know, what constitutes Solanum section potata? This work was then carried forth. Instead of using five placeholders for section potata, we used a range of diversity across the section, and the prior or most recent classification divided potato into 21 series, and we showed that many of these series are intermixed on clades, at least based on plastid DNA restriction site data, and there were four clades. So here's the outgroup here. These are these non-tuber-bearing species, and so we had clade 1, 2, 3, and 4. So we came to different ideas about what are the boundaries around potatoes, what are the relationships within potatoes, and plastid DNA restriction site data really doesn't have enough resolving power to look for species boundaries. And one of the investigations we did in collaboration with the International Potato Center was to, this is with the Scottish Crop Research Institute, was to use AFLPs to look at species boundaries of a large group. Again, there's 361 different accessions here with six different AFLP primer combinations, but the take-home message is that many of these species really cannot be defined on the basis of either molecular data, especially this molecular data set here that has a lot of resolving power, and there was corroboration with morphological data sets as well. So take home number two, there's too many species in wild potatoes. It is really impractical to use molecular marker data to identify the accessions with the everyday needs of identification of a gene bank. And so what we did is we used the accessions in the U.S. germplasm system for a number of replicated field trials with morphometric studies, which is just the idea that you measure things very exactly, you do it in large numbers, and then you use various morphometric techniques such as principal components analysis or other techniques to look for the morphological coherence of species. Again, many of the species weren't well supported, and as an example of one of those, this paper came out a couple years ago. So there were 7 taxa recognized by various taxonomists that we only recognized as two. And this illustration here just shows some of the practical ways in which we're compiling these data. We're publishing monographs of section Potota and also of section Lycopersicon, the tomato group, where we're illustrating all the species with better ideas of what constitutes a species. We've got distribution maps, and we're doing traditional things that taxonomists do, such as compiling all the types together and figuring out the proper names. Now, a very interesting aspect about potatoes, and one of the components of their complexity, is that there's allopolyploids in the group. And this represents a phylogeny based on an ortholog. This one here is with the GBSSI or waxy gene. And these colors here show alleles of individual tetraploids that fall in two very well-supported clades. So here's a group of Mexican tetraploids, alleles here, and here's another group of Mexican tetraploids. And it's a very powerful method to support allopolyploid origins. And indeed, we're finding this, as well as some autopolyploidy, throughout Solanum section Potota. With colleagues at the Vavilov Institute and a colleague of mine from the University of Wisconsin, Dr. Jiming Zhang, this is Dr. Tatiana Gavrilenko, and one of the workers in her lab, Galina Pendenin, we're using genomic in situ hybridization techniques to get genomic conformation of these molecular phylogenies. And indeed, in this tetraploid group, it shows genomic origins that completely corroborate that of the molecular work. Now, a very exciting work, this just came out about a month ago. This is the work of Flor Rodriguez. We are capitalizing on much of the work coming out of the sequencing of various genomic projects to choose single copy orthologs. Prior to this, taxonomists, the first molecular marker really to be used was chloroplast DNA, but it has many potential problems. And then nuclear markers came around, but there weren't many of them. But recent genomic work is coming up with really hundreds, even thousands of nuclear orthologs so that we can have well-supported molecular phylogenies. And these are placeholders here of potato, and these are all the tomato species. And the significant point here is that all of these branches have bootstrap support values, which is essentially just a measure of the statistical reliability of the phylogeny, approaching 100%. And we are continuing this work with additional nuclear orthologs and with additional species. We've done other things. Most of these prior studies showed the relationships of the wild species, but it turns out there's a very simple molecular marker that can distinguish two different geographic subsets, the cultivated potato, that from Chile, and that from, lowland Chile, and that from the upland Andes. And we were able to extract DNA from herbarium specimens and to answer a long-standing question, what's the origin of the European potato, with competing hypotheses between Russian workers, Jusupsuk and Bukasov, and that of various English workers. And we were able to show the introduction of Chilean potato into Europe at a time much earlier than it was supposedly introduced during the late blight epidemic. So some of these molecular markers are settling historical questions about origins of crops. And this is work done in collaboration with the International Potato Center, where they've developed and characterized a set of very useful microsatellite markers. And we applied this to the question of how many cultivated species are there. And we've come up with our answer, that there's three rather than the seven species that has been the dominant idea of cultivated potato diversity, or that of earlier Russian workers that recognized as many as 20. So, just as a brief summary, we've had a number of papers. We've done DNA sequencing phylogenies corroborated with molecular markers. We've done genomic in situ hybridization studies. And the question I asked that last gentleman, what is the utility of these diversity studies using neutral molecular markers? What really got me thinking about this is in the USDA, we're evaluated on one word, which is impact. And, you know, if you're a breeder, you can breed a better crop, and you've got pretty much of an easy case if you've got a good marker, if you're an entomologist and you can kill insects better. But what about taxonomists? We claim that we make predictions, or we make classifications that have predictive value. And so what we've done is we have taken accessions from both traditional classifications and by our new molecular classifications, tested them with a variety of diseases. We've got five papers out now, and asked the question, does taxonomy, at least in potato, have some predictive value? And unfortunately, there's a low predictive value, and it's got me thinking about, you know, these neutral molecular marker studies. What are they? Again, it doesn't in any way put down that wonderful work, but it raises a question. And in the last paper in Crop Science, it is the fifth paper, and they forced me to say, well, what is best? And I think the best thing so far, at least with closely related species, is simple characterization on a disease-by-disease basis for what is useful in a gene bank. We've done various DNA plastid site phylogenetic investigations, marker analyses of closely related species, and again, we're working on monographs. And this is the last slide here. Just to summarize, when we started, there were 232 species of potato. We have, in our latest compilation, less than half of that, about 110 species. We have better defined the boundaries. We've removed the non-tuber-bearing species and showed some to be relatives of tomato, others to be relatives or outgroups of both tomato and potato. We've better shown or documented hybridization in the group that explains the taxonomic complexity, and we have used both nuclear orthologs and genomic studies to clearly show allopolyploid origins in the group. Thank you very much.
So we do have time for a few questions for David.
Yes.
Using neutral marker for function analysis, there are actually a lot of work recently done in association analysis. Statistical method calculated.
I agree. But that is a specific question where you associate a trait to parallel screening of various traits. But I'm saying to to do only one component of it, to have raw diversity analyses, and then to assume that various parts of the analyses, either by trees or principal components analysis, have some degree of utility, I question how useful that is. Yes?
David, this may be a naive question, but you've done all this molecular data. Does it correlate with the morphological data that you collected as well? Or what is the correlation?
In many cases, it does. That large AFLP phenogram was able to show non-concordance. And what I'm trying to say is that using morphological data, we were unable to support many of the species, and indeed that correlated with non-concordance at the AFLP level. But there was a higher level of a group of species that had a geographical component to Peru versus a southern portion of diversity south of there in Bolivia and Argentina. And both AFLP data, morphological data, we have corroborative data with rapids and single copy nuclear RFLPs, all of those supported this larger grouping that we're really thinking might be a species. So we're lumping many of the species in the northern group together into one and the species in the southern group into one because no data set, morphological or molecular, can support it. So yes, there is a lot of concordance between morphology and molecules.